You're listening to Melissa and Lori Love Literacy. Today, we'll be talking to educator and author Molly Ness about intentionally planning for read-alouds. Molly will share an easy-to-prepare protocol for a read-aloud in any grade level or content area.
Welcome, teacher friend. I'm Lori.
And I'm Melissa.
We are two literacy educators in Baltimore. We want the best for all kids, and we know you do too.
Our district recently adopted a new literacy curriculum, which meant a lot of change for everyone. Lori and I can't wait to keep learning about literacy with you today.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Melissa and Lori Love Literacy. We're so excited because today we are diving deep into read-alouds and sharing practical tips for teachers.
And we're here with a returning guest, Molly Ness. She's a former teacher, a professor, an author, and currently vice president of academic content at Learning Ally. And most exciting, she recently wrote a book titled Read Alouds for All Learners. Welcome, Molly.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, we can't wait. This is going to be such a fun episode. We get so many questions about read alouds, and I just think this is practical for teachers in every grade. And we got a sneak preview of your book. Super awesome. So a little plug there for that. We'll also have you share more about that at the end, if that's okay. Really practical.
Thank you. Yeah, I tried to write the book that I wish I had as an early career teacher to help me plan my read alouds.
Yeah, so important. Well, that feels like a good place to start.
Yeah, and I think we should start just even with, what is a read aloud? I know that seems like such a simple question, but I think we often have different interpretations of what that term means. So I'm going to let you jump in to talk about what it is.
Sure. Well, I'm specifically focusing on the interactive, language-rich experience between a teacher and a child or a group of children. And we know that there are so many different formats of read-alouds. Kids can read to each other. Kids can read to stuffed animals or dogs. Parents can read to children. And there is powerful research about all of those as well. But I was really looking at the teacher facilitated read aloud across content areas and really K through eight. I want to push against the idea that read alouds are the purview of our early childhood educators or even our childhood educators, or that read alouds belong only in the reading block. So the focus really is reading aloud, teacher in front of whatever grade level of students, pre-K through eight, and integrating those read alouds in all different content areas and times of the day.
I wanted to ask about, there's one part of your book that talks about audiobooks, and it stuck out to me when I was thinking about, is an audiobook a read aloud? Does that count?
Yeah. So I actually, I dug into this research a little bit because when my daughter was doing her readathon at her elementary school, we logged in all of the minutes that we listened to an audiobook. And because we travel far for different sports competitions, we had, you know, just a ton of minutes, and nobody believed that we had quote unquote read so many minutes. And so it actually started this whole great conversation. Does a read aloud, does listening to a read aloud have the same benefits? Does it count? And we have some really compelling research from people like Stanislaus Dehaan, who I know we all have sort of a fangirl reading crush on, who explains that the language parts of the brain go through the same activation, involvement, engagement when we listen to a book as when we actually read it. So in the words of Daniel Willingham, which I actually borrow for the book, fly that audiobook flag loud and proud because there is such a benefit.
Oh, I love that. And actually, I love that because I just bought his book on audiobook. So I had his book on audiobook
too.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That actually is really awesome, Molly. I'm so glad that we talked about that, Melissa. That was a really, really good question. And I love that you brought that up like right off the bat. So thank you for that info. So Molly, if we could think about why read alouds are important and what the research says about them, that would be really helpful.
Sure. Well, as grateful as I am for this sort of particular moment in our literacy landscape where there's so much conversation about the science of reading, I have felt it has been really focused on the constrained skills of word recognition and decoding. And so there's been some sort of misinformation or confusion around, well, where do read alouds fit in the science of reading? And my argument and all of the data shows that that read alouds are really probably the best effective research-based way to facilitate language comprehension growth. So when we think about that Scarborough rope, as we all love and know so well, read alouds are the way that we get to build background knowledge, expose kids to funds of knowledge, introduce vocabulary, and all of those meaningful unconstrained skills, which contributes so much to comprehension. So there's been, I'm trying to also push against the idea that read alouds say that the science of reading says there's no time or place for read alouds. In fact, the research is really compelling. And we actually know some pretty fascinating research. I think we're all sort of familiar with the research that shows that read alouds increase kids' early language skills, vocabulary, those sorts of things. But I also found some stuff that was pretty interesting. So in particular, I was just blown away by some research that shows physiological benefits of read alouds. And let me walk through an experiment that happened in a neonatal intensive care unit. So a researcher based out of University of Virginia looked at what happened to read alouds of medically fragile babies. So these were babies that had been born prematurely. They were sort of connected to all sorts of wires and monitoring and in those sort of incubators. What would happen when parents read aloud to them? So we know that parents who have children in the neonatal intensive unit often they struggle with how to interact with their baby. They're, you know, fragile. They're a little intimidated by the machinery and such. And so oftentimes mothers in particular go through periods of postpartum depression. They can't take their babies home as well as they might have been able to were a medically robust baby. So this experiment created three different types of reading: a whisper read for very short durations of time period for the really most medically fragile babies, all the way up to sort of a normal speaking, longer duration to the babies that were just about to be discharged. And what the researchers found is that those babies, their oxygen rates increased and their heartbeats decreased, meaning all of those things that happen in our body when we are relaxed, when we are enjoying experiences. And not only did we see that increase in oxygen level and the decrease in heart rate during the read aloud, it lasted for about 20 minutes, 20 to 30 minutes after the read aloud. And these researchers actually then went and interviewed parents as well. And the mothers who were experiencing postpartum depression said that they felt better. They knew what to do now with their babies. They weren't sure how to interact with them previously. And now we have hand them a book and they know what to do, and that they were more determined to read aloud to their babies after taking them home. So we start to see physiological benefits. And we're also seeing it in adults that when people in adulthood listen to read alouds, we see an increase in neurotransmitters like oxytocin, the neurotransmitter that deals with pleasure and enjoyment. So some pretty compelling research that's just starting to look at not only how our linguistic, our vocabulary, all of those literacy skills, but literally how listening to a read aloud shapes our body and transforms us.
Just such a fascinating study. I know. I can't believe, like, who would have even thought to do that? I think that's so cool.
Yeah. I felt like I was having story time and I wanted you to tell me this. What, 12 years ago or 11 years ago when press was in the NICU, I would have done it.
Yes. And actually, they another set of researchers looked at children who were hospitalized and found that when they listened to read alouds, their levels of their self-reported levels of pain and discomfort decreased just by listening to a read aloud. So lots and lots of compelling research around read alouds, not just in the classroom, but in, you know, life settings and all of these different conditions. But of course, we're here to talk about read alouds in the classroom.
Yeah, but I was going to say real quick before we move from that, I do feel like I hear a lot of teachers who say this is one of their favorite times, you know, of the day, is when they get to just read aloud to their students. And I wonder if it's a similar, you know, the similar things happening.
Sure. And that takes me back to my first classroom experience. I was a classroom teacher in Oakland, California, and there was the time of day that kids came back all revved up, amped up from recess / lunch. You know, they're all sweaty because we were in California. They were ready to, you know, recount the drama and conflict on the playground. And that I didn't know much as a first year teacher, but I knew that they needed to like sit and calm their bodies and refocus their energy. And for us, the read aloud was that period. So it was our sort of welcome back to class. Let's recenter. Let's refocus. Let's transition. And at the time then, I didn't know all of the other benefits of it. I just knew it was an easy, enjoyable transition for all of us.
So I just met with a fifth grade teacher, and she has said the same exact thing. She I saw her schedule that was listed on the day, and she had read aloud right after they came back from lunch and recess. And I had asked her about it, and I could see her like trying to defend it as if I was going to like, why did you use that time for that? That's not on the list of things you're supposed to do. And I was like, I think that's the perfect thing to do at that time. It's like right at the right time for just like you said, like recentering and letting them calm. But also you're getting so many other benefits from it, too. Right. Not just calming, but it does have that effect, too. Well, can we jump into some nitty gritty specifics now?
Sure.
All right. So in your book, you actually share a really clear 3-step process for planning read alouds. So I'm wondering if you could walk our listeners through those steps and how they help to set them up for success for reading aloud.
Sure. Well, let me just back up with a tiny bit of context to those steps. So another thing that I was pretty surprised to find that we know there's a decline in read alouds right now. Read alouds are decreasing not only in frequency, but certainly decreasing as kids get older. So, you know, K-2 teachers might read aloud more frequently than, you know, a fifth grade teacher or seventh grade teacher. But to me, the most staggering study I found, and it resonates with me when I was an early career teacher, is that 50 to 70% of teachers don't plan their read alouds. Other than here's the book I'm going to read. They don't go through and examine for instructional opportunities and stopping points and all of those things. And what we know is that when we look at the read aloud as just sort of a impromptu, I'll have some brilliant instructional moment come to me as I'm reading, we miss opportunities. And actually, there's been some discourse analysis studies of the language that teachers use while reading aloud. When they plan intentionally versus when it's sort of that more impromptu experience. And teachers tend to use more low-level questions. They tend to focus on vocabulary, which is not necessarily that rich, meaningful tier two vocabulary like Beck talks about. So I thought about that myself. When I was a first year and early career teacher, my read aloud was, all right, I got 10 to 15 minutes. Here are the pages I'm going to read. And that's what I thought planning a read aloud. Now I know that planning is a multi-step process. So for me, step number one is to evaluate. What I do is I evaluate the book for background knowledge, which we've got so much great conversation about the importance of background knowledge. I extend it to include funds of knowledge and not just background knowledge. Funds of knowledge sort of being sort of the social norms and cultural capitals that happen in books as well. So I evaluate for the background knowledge, which the text assumes that my kids are going to know or that they need to know to bring to the page to make meaning. I also evaluate for instructional opportunities. Like, I really want to make sure that I focus on this portion. So I just go through and I evaluate what are the benefits, what are the potential stumbling blocks, what do my kids need to know to be successful in preparing, in reading this text. In step number two, I explain and I engage. And I do two different ways of explaining and engaging. First of all, I focus on vocabulary. And I mentioned earlier those Isabel Beck and her colleagues, as they would call them, those tier two words, those sophisticated words. So my kindergartners might know hungry, so I can highlight the word famished in a picture book. So I evaluate for, I'm sorry, I explain two different kinds of words, words that you just have to know in the meaning of the book, or as opposed to words I really want to teach. There certainly are lots and lots of vocabulary words in books. We can't get to them all. So some of those words I just want to explain and move on. Other words I'm really going to sort of teach at a deep level. Also in that step two, I explain. And what I do with explaining is I explain what I'm doing as a proficient reader to make meaning of text through think alouds. I use those first person narrative think alouds to explain how I'm making meaning. And I love think alouds. I have written a fair amount about them. In my experience, we've got all this data, observational data, assessment data, all sorts of knowledge about our kids are struggling to comprehend. And so what do? Well, we typically ask them questions, which really isn't actually building their comprehension. It's just getting more data to evaluate their comprehension. But a think aloud is like I'm cracking my head open and talking through the invisible process of making meaning. So I might say something like, I'm getting the sense here that the teacher is frustrated by how the kids are behaving. And you can see that first person narrative. That's how I show my thinking to my kids. So I explain it all. And then in my third and final step, I engage. And I extend. So I engage my kids in cross-curricular activities. And there are just so many different ways. This is where we get to shine our creative lights on things that we're passionate about. And I also really look for literacy-rich activities. So ideas to extend the meaning of the book in reading, writing, thinking, reading, writing, speaking, and listening, and really being purposeful about their connection to literacy.
That is such a clear landscape of three steps, what to do. Again, I wish you were with me, 20 years ago, Molly, or you wrote this 20. I'm glad you wrote it now. It might be helpful to walk us through an example. Do you have an example you could walk us through?
Sure. Well, the one that I often walk through is Knuffle Bunny by Mo Willems. And I do this book because so many of us know and love Mo Willems, and because it's a relatively simple text, but I want to sort of highlight how we could do that in just a simple text. So just a refresher, if people, it's been a while since they've read Knuffle Bunny or they don't know it, it's about a little girl named Trixie who lives in an urban area. She walks down the block with her dad to the laundromat. While she's walking, she's clutching her beloved stuffed animal. They get to the laundromat. Trixie helps her dad in the laundromat, although really she's, being a preschooler and sort of being crazy and silly and playful. They walk back home and Trixie realizes her beloved stuffed animal has gone. She tries to tell her dad, but she speaks toddler-ese and her dad can't understand her. They get home. Trixie's mom instantly recognizes the problem and says, "Where's Knuffle Bunny?" And the rest of the story is them running back to the laundromat, searching for the stuffed animal. And the first words that Trixie ever says are "Knuffle Bunny." So let's start with number one, evaluating sources of potential confusion as well as opportunity. So here to me is a great opportunity for background knowledge versus funds of knowledge. So background knowledge. My kids have to know what a laundromat is. There are lots of kids who don't. Maybe they have a washer and dryer in their home. Maybe they have somebody who does the laundry for them. Maybe whatever their home situation is. They have to know that the laundromat is a public space where anybody can go to do their laundry. They also have to know sort of what it means to go down the block. If you have a kid who's living on a farm in Texas who has never seen a city block, you have to understand that it is a meaning of it's a unit of distance or a measurement. But there's also some important funds of knowledge here, like what I mean, those cultural capitals, the way that my family operates is different than your family. And there are certainly things. First of all, not every kid has a beloved stuffed animal. So some kids, if they don't have a stuffed animal that they just drag with them everywhere, might be like, well, what's the big deal? She's lost her, you know, her stuffed rabbits. No big deal. Another cultural norm in this book is that Trixie's dad is the one who leaves to go do the laundry. That's the family in this family, their dynamic of household chores, not the same in every family. So that may be a potential stumbling block. So I would say to my kids, in this book, the book takes place in a laundromat. Maybe I show a Google image picture of a laundromat. Maybe I talk to them very briefly about who does the chores in your home. So I'm sort of getting some of those ideas out there so they're going to be successful to interact with the text. Then as I read the text, I highlight my important vocabulary. Off the top of my head, I remember the word bald. Trixie is so upset she bawls and she goes boneless. And those of us who have had toddler tantrums experience, we know what that's like, but we have to explain. It doesn't literally mean when she went boneless, her bones fell out of her body. It just means she's so upset that she, you know, goes limp and she bawled. Great tier two vocabulary. My kids know cry, so I can give them a more sophisticated way to say it and say, bawling here is means she's crying so heavily she can't talk. So then at the end of the book, after I've wrapped up with my think alouds, where I've cracked open my head and made my invisible process of understanding visible to my kids, I would do some extension activities. I might pull in some geometry. We might talk about city blocks and do some math around how many steps or how many feet go into a block, or depending on whatever the mathematics skills of my students are. This was one of the areas that I feel like I needed a little bit more support as an early teacher. I would do these activities, which were kind of like the cutesy art things, but didn't really have a connection to literacy. So if I'm having my kids do coloring of here's a stuffed animal, color it to make it look like your stuffed animal. Well, how is that helping my kids with reading, writing, speaking, or listening? And if I can't really justify the connection to reading, writing, speaking, or listening, I'm doing a cutesy activity and not a literacy rich activity. And my instructional time is so precious. I have to allot it for those literacy rich activities.
Do you have any other examples of good literacy rich activities, Molly?
For Nuffle Bunny, the specific text?
Yeah, or just in general. I'm just like imagining teachers going, oh gosh, am I doing a literacy rich activity or am I doing a cutesy activity?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think if you can justify it, this activity builds blank, my students blank by blank. So this activity, so if you have your kids turn and talk to their neighbor, how might Trixie have felt when she lost her bunny? And you say, turn and talk to your neighbor. That's facilitating oral language. If you are able to say, I am building my students blank language by blank, having them interact and engage in conversational turns with the neighbor, that's a literacy rich activity. But if I'm doing something that is taking paper plates and building paper plates, building a washing machine out of paper plates, cutesy activity more than a literacy rich. And certainly there are all sorts of creative ways to make some of these kind of art activities engaging and literacy rich. We could write directions. We could, you know, do step-by-step things if that's our focus. But we just have to be really clear on what is my focus here? What am I building?
So helpful. I love the frame of like, how do we justify it in these reading, writing, speaking, and listening? That is really helpful to me because I know sometimes, you know, I see things and I'm like, oh, okay, that feels like a stretch, but I'm not sure exactly why. And you just named it really clearly. Like my students are doing this and it's helping them with this. That's really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah. And I don't ever want to sort of say like there's no time or place for some of these activities. You know, the Friday before Halloween at 2:30, is it okay to have kids color pumpkins? Sure. I get it, but that's not how we want to spend the vast majority of our instructional time. Our students need that literacy support. So that reading, writing, speaking, and listening.
All right. So you mentioned that this can happen outside of ELA class as well. So I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about that, because I know that that's probably something difficult for teachers is, okay, how do I take this and apply it to science or social studies or math?
Sure. Sure. And I will say that part of the book is a whole section on how to read aloud in music class. In music, you can take, there are so many musicians, Coldplay and Bob Dylan and Aretha Franklin, all these people who have picture book versions of their song lyrics. Song lyrics are essentially poetry. So maybe you have the kids read the book and imagine what the music might be. And then you play the actual song for them and compare and contrast the differences between what they envisioned and what the actual book is. So I'm just focusing on music, but there's even ways to do it in physical education. I believe that the same process can happen across content areas, but I think we have to be mindful that as content area teachers, our read aloud may look differently. It may not look like the 15 solid minutes of sitting in your rocking chair, doing a, you know, beginning, middle, and end, start to cover book. It might be, you know, I read aloud for 3 minutes from a speech that a politician that we're studying made, or a war decree in whatever history unit we're studying. Or in a science class, I can take a newspaper article. You know, today, as we talk, we are living through this particularly hot week. There's all these newspaper stories about rising temperatures. Well, grab a newspaper and do a, you know, 10 minute read aloud of the paper. So it doesn't have to be a picture book. There's so many things to read aloud from: speeches and letters and newspaper articles and magazine articles and the sports page for our PE teachers, that I think we sort of have to just fight the notion that a read aloud is like rocking chair, picture book. It doesn't have to be that experience.
Such a good point. You know, it's interesting because Melissa and I love, obviously, like Tim Shanahan. And he recently, I'll bring this up because I think it's so fun to think about. He recently did a podcast, but it's, I don't want to say but, and it's his weekly blog. He's reading it. And I love hearing his voice. I love listening to it. And it's funny because I feel like the first time I listened to it, I was like, I don't think this is like an actual podcast by the definition of a podcast. I think it's a read aloud, which is thoroughly enjoyable, but it, you know, it confused me for a minute. And then I was like, okay, it's really a read aloud of his blog, which I actually prefer listening to rather than reading, because I love hearing his voice. So it was just, it's just really funny that, you know, even as an adult, I'm like, oh, okay, now like we have this podcast forum, but he's really doing a read aloud on that podcast forum. And I think it's so fun to listen to that, but it's doing that in a way that brings me the that like content, like you just said, right? It's an article that comes out weekly. It's a blog that comes out weekly. And now I have another way to access that as an adult.
And you're tapping into something that I, as an adult reader, do when my book group chooses a book that I think is tough to get into. I start listening to it as an audiobook. It's my entry point. And usually what I find is that by activating my background knowledge and setting the context and all of those things that listening does, I'm then more likely to be able to continue the book as the traditional, you know, read the hard copy or read on my Kindle or what have you. So I think that's an important thing that we can keep in consideration for our kids as well, that as we have them listen to a read aloud, be it us or be it the, you know, the podcast, or even publishers now are coming out with audio files of their textbook, that's a great entryway into difficult text.
Yeah, I feel like that's a perfect transition to talking about students at all grade levels. Like I know you mentioned in the beginning, and you've been reiterating it throughout, like read alouds are not just rocking chair K-2, you know, kindergarten experiences. And I know that was some of my favorite time as a fifth grade teacher. Melissa, I'm so glad that you had that conversation with a fifth grade teacher recently. Like I have such fond memories of reading to my students. I even, when I taught high school, I read aloud to my students and they were always surprised, you know, and I just thought, oh, this is like a great time to calm yourself down and listen. But I'm wondering about the benefits of reading, you know, aloud to students at all grade levels. And is there different purposes at different ages?
Well, the purpose, I think, for all of readers and is that language comprehension, that we are giving them exposure to background knowledge, that we are activating their purposes for reading and their motivation, not to mention all of the socio-emotional benefits that come from listening to a read aloud. When we read aloud to a larger secondary class, we are opening the door for juicy conversations by sharing a common text. So I think there's so much benefit around that. But we also know that kids' comprehension, it lags behind their listening comprehension until about seventh or eighth grade, meaning that we, as we read aloud to kids, we are able to give them access and opportunity to more difficult texts than they would be able to encounter on their own. And that is so important, especially for our kids who may be struggling readers to sort of equalize the playing field in terms of their background knowledge and the content that they need access to become proficient readers. So we really have to be mindful that it isn't until late middle school that our comprehension and our listening comprehension sort of start to match.
Yeah, that's really helpful, Molly. I have a question in my mind and I don't have it fully formed yet, so we'll see where it goes. but what I was just thinking when you were talking is that, you know, when I was a teacher, I felt sometimes like I used read alouds really well and other times when I didn't necessarily. And I think the times I did match up with the things you're talking about, which was like, this is going to be a really tough text for my students or section of a text for my students. So we're going to, you know, I'm going to read it out loud to them and we'll work through it together. Or I just want to like show them my thinking in some way that I don't think that they'll be able to do. But other times I will say, I felt like I was just like, we need to move through this fast, so I'm going to read it out loud. And I'm wondering if you have any like cautions against that, like just reading out loud just to kind of rush through a text versus like all this really rich discussion and the talk of read alouds that you're talking about today.
Yeah, well, I think we have to be mindful that there is that what you talked about is actually a purposeful strategy that effective proficient readers use. They adjust their speed for a reading either silently or orally, according to their purpose, their engagement, all of those things. I'm a reader that when I encounter, you know, paragraphs of really descriptive language of a setting, I'm like, flip, 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 get me to the action. And that's actually using a strategy and purposeful. And if you think about, you know, the Scarborough's rope, those two strands coming together are with intention and strategy and purpose. So I think it's okay to speed through parts of a read aloud that may not be as engaging, or to choose parts of a read aloud that are more difficult. And I think it's also really important to say to our kids, I'm going to read this paragraph has a lot of juicy language, so I'm going to read it out loud to you. The next page you guys are going to read on your own, so that you're sort of alerting kids of the explicitness of what you're doing as you read aloud and as you model whatever you're going to do in that particular moment.
Yeah, what I'm hearing you say is like it really matters as a teacher to plan that out. Your number one, what was the E for that one? Evaluate the text for those different purposes. Like, when does it make sense for you to, you know, you might not always have all those questions to ask and think alouds to do and vocabulary. It might sometimes be just reading more quickly, and you if you evaluate the text, you can plan that out. And at times it might, this is the time when it makes sense for the students to be reading. And it sounds like you're saying, Molly, too, that I would say even more as in the older grades, it might go back and forth. Like it doesn't have to necessarily be a set, I'm reading aloud for 20 minutes. That's all that's happening in this time.
Like a gradual release. Right. Like it's not going to look like that. So like neat and clean.
Absolutely. And one of the things I spent nearly two decades as a university professor working in pre-service teacher preparation. And I went into one of my pre-service teacher's classrooms to do a observation. And her read aloud was pulling up a video of somebody else doing a read aloud. They, you know, there's so many out there. They're on YouTube and, you know, the storyline online.net. And they were so prevalent during the pandemic as all sorts of publishers and authors were and allowing people to do videos. And those hold a certain purpose. But what they miss is they miss the opportunity for the interactiveness of a read aloud. They miss the opportunity for a teacher to literally read the room of how her students are responding and either looking confused or looking really bored. And they just don't allow us the flexibility that we would to be responsive to our kids in that classroom moment.
And that kind of connects to what you're saying, like coming back to the audiobooks, right? Like there might be a certain purpose for using audiobooks that have a great benefit, but you also want to do this interactive part of a read aloud, which you couldn't do with an audiobook.
For sure. And we adjust our instruction day by day and even minute by minute. So I certainly think as long as we're able to rationalize our decisions, I am going to read this paragraph out loud because of this, or I'm going to have kids partner read here, or I'm going to have them read silently here, whatever, as long as you're able to justify it. But again, we really need to make sure that those read alouds continue, particularly in the areas that we know they're declining, which is upper elementary school, which is secondary school, which is those content area classrooms.
So, Molly, what would you say we read aloud in content area classrooms? Like, can you give, I know you shared earlier, but like, can you give a practical example to a teacher listening?
Sure. So let's choose. Well, I think I talked through a music one.
Yeah.
So if I were an art teacher, there are so many biographies of particular artists. There are, you know, there's a fabulous picture book about the inventor of Crayola crayons that I could read to my kindergartners. Every kindergartner uses crayons in some capacity. If I were a gym teacher and I were introducing whatever new sport, I could go to let's just say, for example, I am teaching volleyball. Well, there's a National Volleyball Federation. I could go to their website and pull up the rules of volleyball. And rather than me explaining them, I could literally read the kids the rules and then think aloud, because chances are those rules that are written in the very formal language are not going to be immediately accessible to my kids. If I were in a science classroom, I mean, science, there's just so many ways that it's hard for me to just choose one. I actually, in the book, I talk through using picture books as an entry point into really difficult scientific concepts. The math example I use is fractals, and the science example I use is a book about nanospectrography, which is like the really complex chemistry explanations. I was a terrible high school student, but I know if my teacher had pulled out a picture book that's an explanation of, you know, in a social studies class, here's the picture book version of, you know, the history of the Middle East peace crisis, or here's a picture book that explains, you know, evaporation or what have you, it would give me an entry point, which builds the background knowledge for whatever text that I am then going to use on in a deeper read.
And I'll just say, Molly, because I have a 4-year-old, and so I'm reading books all the time to him. And so I learned so much, especially science, to be honest with you. I mean, the planets, the sun and the moon, the volcanoes, like you name it, like all these kinds of things that they're very easy to understand, but you get a lot of information from them.
There are, and talk about like making things accessible. The other thing that we know about the data around read alouds is that the vast majority of read alouds are older books. They are the books that we loved. And I did this myself. I remember reading the book Hatchet to my kids, my sixth grade kids who lived in the middle of downtown Oakland, had no outdoorsy experience. This was before, you know, the TV shows about Survivor and things like that. It was a total flop. And I think we also have to have the courage to abandon a read aloud that isn't going well. But I think we also have to push ourselves to read aloud from things that are more current, and not just always go to that, oh, I read this book every year, Mike, I love it, so therefore my kids love it, because there are so many. It's hard to stay on top and with the current publications of just how much comes out on a daily basis and the richness of the diversity of not only the content, but who's writing it and the perspective and all those things. And so at the end of the book, I provide some lists of here are some of my favorite awards, resources, ways to stay current, because what we know is that most teachers sort of revert to the read alouds that they always do, or they're just a small minority of read alouds today are books that are published within the last 5 years.
Yeah. Those examples are so helpful. I can't wait to check out the list in your book. But I do want to say too, like, thank you for expanding my view on that. Like the gym example that you gave, for example, reading the volleyball directions. That's, I think, a really cool example that really helped me kind of like conceptualize it and put it in for different content areas. Cause a lot of times it seems like, all right, I can get this for ELA. I got this for science, for social studies or history, but like, what would I do in gym? What would I do in art or music? So thank you for those extended examples. And that's such a good example. Like the directions might have that language that is a little bit more formal. And then that's a great opportunity for that think aloud and making that thinking visible. So thank you for that. And it does, I think, provide all of the, like the Velcro for the knowledge that's about to happen coming forward. So.
Yeah, and it's an exciting, as in the last couple of years, all of this coverage around the science of reading has emerged. We're now, I think, starting to see more conversations about the importance of language comprehension and background knowledge, thanks to, you know, podcasts like yours and the work of people like Natalie Wexler. And so all of these, as we think about the purpose of a read aloud, be it a kindergarten classroom or an eighth grade classroom, it is all about that language comprehension, that top part, those unconstrained parts of Scarborough's Rope. And so when we think about how do read alouds fit into the science of reading, well, you can't talk about the science of reading without language comprehension. And how do you build that and activate that and scaffold it and support it for kids through read alouds?
Yeah, because we know that we hear some people who say, you know, wait until they get the get the decoding down and then they'll learn, then they can read on their own to learn all of the language comprehension parts. But we know, we all know, we can't wait until then.
Absolutely not. And we have, yeah. And we also have to remind our older kids, just as we can't wait with the younger kids, we also have to show our older kids, if they are in their, you know, sixth grade social studies class or their eighth grade music class, that reading matters to us. It matters to our classroom culture, and it's how we build our knowledge. And a read aloud is a great way to model that.
Yeah. And I love what you said. I'll just like put a stamp on that too, is that it also is an opportunity to read text that would be really difficult for the students to read, right? Then you have the opportunity to be able to help them through a text that instead of letting them struggle through it, you can help them through it. Well, Molly, is there anything else about read alouds that you want to touch on before we wrap up?
Well, I do just want to point out that I specifically focused on K through eight, but I don't want the message to be that high school teachers and college teachers and, you know, people of working with learners of all ages. There is no unintended message here that read aloud should stop at grade eight. So I so love hearing about high school teachers who it's a part of their classroom. But my specific focus was on grade through grade eight. But that does not in any way say that, you know, we stop reading aloud when kids move on to high school or what have you.
And before kindergarten, too, right?
Obviously. Absolutely.
Yes. Love that. Thank you for that. So do you want to share the title of your book and tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. So it's a Solution Tree publication. And I believe it's actually one of Solution Tree's first forays into literacy. They have a whole lot of professional development material for other content areas, but not as much in literacy. And it's called Read Aloud for All Learners. And I was thrilled to have Natalie Wexler, who I know has been a frequent visitor on your podcast, write the foreword. I will also offer that that there's a huge amount of research in it. And if you are a teacher or a learner or whatever your role is that actually wants the direct research, like if you want to dig into the PDF of the research and can't get to it because it's behind a paywall, I will happily share it with you. So don't let that stop your learning just because it's, you know, in an academic journal that you don't have access to.
Thank you, Molly. And so it's Read Alouds for All Learners. And Molly Ness is our guest today. We'll have this linked in the show notes. And Molly, we will make sure we have a way for listeners to get in contact with you if they'd like the research through our show notes as well.
I would love to follow up with anybody who's who's interested in more and also to hear your ideas. I mean, teachers could not be they are the most innovative, creative people. And to hear how people are reading aloud in ways that I couldn't even think of because I know they're out there and happening on a daily basis in classrooms all over.
Yeah, we've had teachers actually send us videos before, like on Facebook and stuff from the things that we've talked about on the podcast. And they're like, I do it this way in my classroom. That's so fun. I love that.
I hope I get some of those. I would love that.
So maybe we can get some read aloud videos.
Yeah, we can send them. We can send them along to you, Molly.
Perfect.
Well, thank you. This was so helpful and informative and like most importantly, super practical. I'm so grateful that you came on the podcast to share this and that you wrote a book. Thank you for doing that.
Well, it's every time I do a book, I say I'm never doing another one again. And then so we'll see. This might be my last, but who knows? So I look forward to feedback and ongoing conversations from whoever has dug into it.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, literacy lovers. To stay connected with us, sign up for our email list at literacypodcast.com.
And to keep learning together, join the Melissa and Lori Love Literacy Podcast Facebook group and be sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter.
If this episode resonated with you, take a moment to share with a teacher friend or leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts.
Just a quick reminder that the views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests of the Melissa and Lori Love Literacy podcast are not necessarily the opinions of Great Minds PBC or its employees.
We appreciate you so much, and we're so glad you're here to learn with us.